Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 61. My name is Karen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Kristen.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, everyone.
Very formal today.
I know, I felt like I was being very proper, and you didn't even, like, move your head to the cadence of my words.
It's because I'm still asleep.
To be clear, this is 3 hours later than the last time we recorded.
Right, and I'm still tired.
A week too. And
3 hours, and I'm still tired.
Yeah. I woke up, by the way, at 4:30 a.m. this morning and was like, should I just stay awake? And I was like, no, that's what a crazy person would do. I don't know why.
Hey,
I've transitioned into a morning person. I'm like, oh, it's 6:45. I got up at 6:45 this morning. Yeah, that's a good time to be awake.
I mean, I'm not that much of a morning person, but I am getting up earlier these days than I normally would. Like, yeah. 8:30 isn't an ungodly hour, whereas it used to be an ungodly
hour.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know.
Also, the struggle of working second shift and being your own boss is that you can sleep in, you know, and
it's
all that
true.
Stuff. So.
It's so true.
We have a pretty cool episode for you guys today. It's another big one, so I'm going to try to just keep the ball rolling because we don't want another over 2 hour episode. I'm going to do my best. If you would like to contact us to talk about the length of our episodes or anything else, you can do so at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, and Facebook, and Prophecy Radio Podcast at gmail.com. For our news today, we have, like, a lot of little bite-sized things and a couple of bigger things to discuss. So, like I said, I'm just going to run through these. First of all, I would like to tell everyone, we've announced this on social media, but we didn't say this on the podcast yet. I think because I found out after the podcast.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think we knew about it last time.
Yeah, yeah. So, the Riordanverse podcasts are hosting their annual Winter Solstice live stream fundraiser, which is super exciting. They've done this before. I want to say that they did the Lightning Thief the 1 year. I think this is the second year they're doing it. And it will take place on YouTube on December 21st, which I believe is a Wednesday, at 6 p.m. Eastern for a watch-along of Thor, Love, and Thunder. And this is meant to be in support of the National Network of Abortion Funds and the Red Nation, which works with, like, native issues and stuff like that. There are links in our new link tree, which I made and made.
It's fancy.
It has our colors and
yeah.
It's very pretty. I was very proud of it. We have links to all our social media and all of our important pages on there. So please go check that out. We also have links to both of these organizations. And I'm really excited about this. I haven't watched Love and Thunder since it was in theaters because, like,
I haven't either.
It wasn't my favorite Thor movie.
I don't hate it as much as other people hate
it,
though.
I think I was more neutral on it than I was expecting it to be, so I'm kind of excited to revisit it.
Yeah.
I will be there. I'm not sure if Kristen will be.
It's smack dab in the middle of my workday, and we are understaffed at my job, so I don't know. I'm going to say I don't think I'm going to be able to, but if for some reason I am able to just be in attendance and it, you know, because I can turn on something and watch while I work.
Right.
But I'm just not sure how the, like, being online for it.
Maybe you'll be in the chat versus, like, the actual
possibly.
Live stream.
Possibly. Yeah. We'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. The podcasts that will be in attendance include Of the Eldest Gods, The Best Damn Camp, We Accidentally Vaporized Our Podcast, The Newest Olympian, Through the Mist, Monstrous Women, Muses of Mythology, The Half-Blood Report, That Damn Meme Page, Return to Camp Half-Blood, Seaweed Brain, and...
Of course.
Prophecy Podcast.
Woohoo! Prophecy Radio Podcast.
Sorry!
Didn't even know the name!
I'm so used to seeing it on Twitter as at Prophecy Podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are Prophecy Radio.
Prophecy Radio: A Percy Jackson Podcast.
That's correct. Absolutely.
Yeah, so there's going to be a bunch of us there. This live stream is probably going to be absolute chaos, but I think yeah. it's going to be a lot of fun. I've been interacting a lot with these other podcast hosts through the Discord that we have together, and everyone is really lovely. I have not actually, like, spoken voice-to-voice or face-to-face with any of them yet, and it'll be really interesting. And, I mean, I've done lives before. We both have with our other podcasts, but we've never done it with Prophecy Radio. Mm-hmm. And so I think it'll be really interesting. Obviously, if you can donate to those links, that's kind of the point of this whole thing. Would really appreciate that. But if not, please just join us and interact with us. And hopefully yeah. we can be in the chat and talk to you guys. And you get to watch a movie. It's going to be sort of one of those Disney, like, watch together things. So you can, like, log in or see the timestamp or whatever. And we can all watch together.
Yeah.
We can't actually live stream the movie because that's super illegal.
Right, yeah.
But that's fine. So yeah, December 21st, 6 p.m. Eastern. I'm super excited / nervous / excited, but we'll see how it goes.
It's a double slash. Double yeah. excited / yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Two parts excited, one part nervous.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay, and then I would also like to remind everyone of our art giveaway. Last week we interviewed Sarah at Hell Red Sky. It was an amazing episode, so awesome, and they are giving away one of their commissions. This commission is worth $40. It is a chibi commission of any character of your choice. It doesn't have to be Percy Jackson. It doesn't even have to be a fictional character. You can get one of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Which is,
yeah,
fun.
That's super fun. Makes a great avatar on Twitter, your other social media.
I was going to say, one of our friends has a friend who does fan art of herself every year for her Jewish Christmas cards.
Yes,
Jewish
yes.
holiday cards.
I was like, who are we talking about?
Jewish Christmas cards. My God, my brain is not turned on yet. Her Hanukkah cards or her Jewish holiday cards, whatever you want to call them. But it's always so cool because she, like, commissions, like, a really cool sketch of her reading or her snuggled up with her cat or whatever. Yeah. And it's always really adorable. So if you wanted to do something like that, you could even do something like that.
Yeah.
It's just the little character, though. But still, it would be very cute.
Yeah. I'm really excited about it. I hope people enter. All you have to do to enter, it's super easy. Follow at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter. Follow at Hell Red Sky on Twitter. And then use the hashtag Prophecy Radio Giveaway to tell us who your favorite Percy Jackson character is. And I'm gonna say, like, if you have friends who want to enter and aren't, like, the biggest Percy Jackson fan, like, just make something.
And she said,
just say Percy or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm more interested in getting more people to visit Sarah's page
yeah.
and, like, enjoy her
yeah.
art.
Because her art's amazing. She
yeah.
doesn't just do Percy stuff.
Oh, no.
But, like,
yeah.
you know, her Percy stuff's really cool. So
yeah.
yeah.
So I'm more interested in that. So, like, try to spread the word. We would really appreciate it. And this closes December 19th. That's the last day you can enter. December 20th, we will
be drawing the winner.
Yeah, be drawing the winner, announcing the winner, and it'll be awesome. So please, please, please enter. You have 1 week left, basically, when this episode comes out, and we would really appreciate that. Okay, one more self-promo piece of news is that I wrote an article for Subjectify Media. I told you guys it was coming. And I'm really proud of this. It's a fairly long article, but I was really happy to put it together. It's titled, Now is the Perfect Time to Be a Percy Jackson Fan, and It's Only Going to Get Better. And I stand by that 100%, would put my life on the line to defend that sentiment. And essentially, I wrote this article kind of explaining, like, hey, we have all this stuff that we can look back on, the old, like, the books that are already out in this huge universe full of books that all kind of go together and stuff like that. But also we have so many new things coming out with the TV show, with Chalice of the Gods and The Sun and the Star, plus all the Rick Riordan Presents books. You can really get lost in the Riordan-verse as it is. And that's really awesome. And I think that over the years, it will continue to get better as the show continues to gain traction and more books in the Percy Jackson universe come out. This article also serves as a primer for people who are like, oh my gosh, I don't know where to start. Like, there are so many books. What order are they in? Like, what do I have to read? What can I skip? That sort of thing. So it kind of lays out, like, the order to read everything in, the titles of everything. Gives you options if you, like, don't want to read certain things or whatever. And I really wanted to write this so that people who listen to us and who follow us for Percy Jackson content can go to their friends and be like, look, I really want you to read this book.
Right.
Here's everything you can look forward to. Because some people like jumping into fandoms that expansive because there's just so much to, like, take in.
Yeah.
Like Star Wars and Star Trek right. and all that stuff. There's just so many stories. So this is a really good article to send to a friend or a family member that you want to get into Percy Jackson, and they can keep coming back to it whenever they want to.
So for this holiday season, give your loved one the gift of Rick Riordan.
Yes.
You can physically give them the gift of Rick Riordan's books, not him.
Not him. We are not kidnapping.
No, no, no author
Rick Riordan. That would be sending bad. Him to people.
Not allowed to do that anymore. No, but you
I think
can.
It was always illegal.
I was gonna say, pretty much, yeah. No, you can give them the gift of a book, or you can send them this article and say, hey, this is going to only get bigger from here, and I want you to join me on this and join me on this adventure.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And, like, we always like to remind people, if you are on a budget, if your money is a little tight, these books are old enough that they are everywhere. They are in libraries. You can get them really cheap elsewhere. So
if you happen to be a Kindle Unlimited member, I'm reasonably certain I know the entire first series is in there, because that's
right.
how I've been reading them, because I don't own the ebooks, but I like to read ebooks, so
yeah.
I've been checking, and they're in Kindle Unlimited, which for 10-something a month, you
yeah.
get to read as much as you want. So if, like, that's something that's kind of keeping you from it, is your library's always out of them or whatever, there are some cheap-ish options that will still allow you to read them and read them fast if you want.
Yeah, definitely. So would appreciate you guys checking that out and passing it on to the people you know. And, okay, so getting into the rest of the news for today. I almost said this evening. It is definitely still morning. The New York Times crossword puzzle had Percy Jackson as an answer.
I saw that.
Which I thought was pretty cool. And Reed Riordan wrote an article about Judy I. Lynn joining Rick Riordan Presents. I don't think it really gives us any additional information than what we saw in the Publisher's Weekly article. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that this is the exact same stuff. But it's just cool that they announced it on their website. And if
yeah.
you guys missed it and want to go see it, I will, of course, put the link in our show notes. Mark Ashiro says he has to sign 11,220 tip-ins for The Son and the Star. So that's how many signed pre-orders.
I was going to say, that's just the pre-orders.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure, like, most, usually, I think it's Barnes & Noble or, they usually do, like, signed books too, so
right.
I'm sure they probably have more to do at some
yeah.
point in the future.
I wonder if they're asking for some extras. So
oh,
that,
probably.
Yeah.
But, like, those are just for the pre-orders.
Yeah. That's a lot of books. Honestly, like, I'm kind of surprised it's not more, just because there are so many Percy Jackson fans. This is a Nico D'Angelo story. Like, you would think that there would just be a lot more, but
yeah.
I know not everybody can pre-order.
Yeah.
That signed copy is more expensive.
Well, maybe they're pacing themselves, too.
Maybe.
It's 11,000 to start, and then they
yeah.
get another 11,000
well,
next month.
And they said that this was until February, so they had from now until February to be able to sign them.
Okay.
So at least they don't have to do it, like,
before Christmas, ready
yeah.
to go.
Like, overnight. That would be so difficult.
Yeah.
And Mark also said that this is the first time they've ever had to do something
aww.
Like this. So, yeah, I thought that was really nice.
It has to. Okay. By now, I'm sure Rick is just like,
yeah.
because I don't blame him. It's a lot of books and he's done it a lot. But
yeah.
I'm sure Mark is super excited. Like,
yeah.
I get to sign 11,000 copies for this book that people want to read. Like, that's cool.
That's a huge milestone for
oh,
an
yeah.
author. And I saw in the comments somebody asked them, will your signature look like just scribbles afterwards? And they were like, well, that's why I have until February. Like, I'm hoping that it doesn't turn out that way. But if you've ever seen a Rick Riordan sign book, it's literally just a couple of loop-de-loops.
You can see the R's, and
yeah.
then the rest of it is just
it's just scribbles. But, like, I don't blame him, because
no.
he's probably signed, I would like to know how many books he has signed
in
his
lifetime.
Yeah. yeah. But that might be a good question to ask Becky, actually.
Probably reached a million. Like,
I mean, you would
With all of those
it's
books.
It's gotta be very high.
I mean, I know the first series basically the first series came out before the whole, like, buying signed copies at Barnes & Noble is kind of, like, a thing.
Right.
So, like, it wasn't like he had to do this for every book he's ever published or anything. But the last, I would say Heroes of Olympus has probably had signed copies mm-hmm. of each of them. And,
yeah.
And from then on, with all the different conventions and signing things, because these days, getting a book signed by the author has kind of become a thing.
Yeah.
And people are way more, like, apt to go to a convention because they might have a chance to get their book signed.
Right.
And so, yeah.
In my experience, having gone to a couple of his tours in the past, he doesn't... the ones that I had specifically been to, he didn't sit there and sign them for you. You could just buy pre-signed books at, like, a table. And so I assume that he always has some signed ones on hand, so he's probably constantly... And, like, I bought... That one time I bought the Lightning Thief sign, so, like, he signs older ones, too.
Yeah. Like, every morning, wakes up, signs 100 books.
Yeah.
Goes and makes coffee, signs 100 more. Like, every day. It's part of his routine now.
Right?
Sign your signature 100 times.
Yeah, that would be funny.
He's like, no, and it will never be a part of my schedule.
Okay, so there is officially 1 month left of filming season one. It will wrap up in January. We are getting very close. I feel like the, like, day-to-day news about it has kind of waned a little bit, and they haven't really been talking as much, which makes sense, because if we're filming near the end of the season, then we're gonna kind of keep some of the details close. But we are getting very near the finish line.
Plus, they've probably hit most of the big beats from all of the episodes, or they're getting really close to having wrapped up all the big, like,
right.
action scenes and things like that. And now that last month is probably more, like, checking for close-ups and making sure they have coverage for all the moments they want and making sure that all the... You know, all the scenes, they've got all the kids, you know, reacting the way they're hoping and, like, things like that. They're kind of looking at what they've got and making sure they've got everything they need to mm-hmm. start editing.
Can I also point out that we still do not have Zeus and Poseidon casting?
I know. I'm kind of curious why they're keeping it, like,
yeah.
under wraps. I mean, we have a handful of the gods. We've got Ares. We've got Dionysus. We've got a handful of them. We found out about Hermes recently. But, like, why are you hiding them from
yeah.
me?
Give them to us.
I want to know. Like, yeah, especially Zeus and Poseidon. It's kind of an important thing.
It is.
Especially Poseidon.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, even Zeus.
Zeus is too.
The
but...
Lightning Thief is about him being angry at Percy.
Right.
So,
like, we don't see him a whole ton, but you see him. And he's
yeah.
important. And I want to know who's mad at Walker / Percy. Percy Walker. Walker Percy.
Okay. So, one exciting casting reveal we did get was that we now know what Sunny the Chimera looks like because Rick posted on Mastodon a gif that Becky made him of him holding Baby, who is part of the cast.
Yeah.
He says, Becky made this gift for me. It's me holding Baby, one of my favorite cast members for the Percy Jackson TV show. Baby has a short role, but it's an Emmy contender. And of course, Baby is a little tiny chihuahua. So cute. Oh my gosh. And it can be none other than Sunny the Chimera,
right.
son to Echidna. And that's really exciting. And Rick looks beyond happy, so
it's a puppy.
Yeah
it's so
tiny and cute.
So adorable.
Oh my gosh, I really loved that.
Aww.
There was also an interview with comicbook.com and Alexandra Daddario, and I just thought this was really nice because they asked her basically how she feels about the TV show and stuff like that. She said, it's wonderful. That movie was so great for my career. It was great for my life. It was a wonderful part to play, and I'm so excited for Leah that she gets to play it. The Percy Jackson books are so beloved. I was just a small part of it. She also goes on to say, it was a long time ago, and I still get recognized for it. And then, I'm really excited about the series, and I hope people love it, Daddario said. I now have stepchildren, and you realize shows like Percy Jackson get kids into reading. It gets kids thinking. It gets them understanding about what it is to be different and to struggle with things. And, like, did not know she was married, by the way. Did not know she had stepchildren. And, like, I keep forgetting that she's, like, our age. She's, like, 36, I think. Yeah. Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, you're too young to have children.
You are Annabeth. You are stuck at age 18.
Not
or whatever.
Even that, but, like, I feel like she's, like, kind of my age. And I'm like, I'm too young to have children. I'm 34.
Right. So. What are you thinking? Yeah. I'm way too young for that. Yeah.
She finishes up by saying, I think that's why people love it so much. It's this really warm, supportive story that teaches you to be who you are and be supported when you're going through hard times. In addition to just being wonderfully entertaining, I think it's great that a whole new generation of kids will have the opportunity to see it on TV. And I love that. I love the former cast's support of the television show. They have been nothing but very positive about everything. And of course, we know that they will not be appearing in the television show. Rick wants that to be very separate,
mm-hmm.
and I'm totally okay with that, but I'm just happy to see them talking about it.
I mean, there literally have only... There's been one film / TV version of Annabeth, and it's Alexander Daddario. So then you've also got the musical Annabeth. So, like, there's very few Annabeths in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it has to be exciting to be like, okay, I played this character, and now this young person is going to take over the role and play this character, and I'm excited to see what they do with it.
Yeah.
It's like anybody who's played insert figure here. Like
Wednesday Addams. There's been so many Wednesday Addams, and everyone brings something different to the role.
Exactly. And it's like you kind of join the pantheon of I'm playing this,
the
you know,
pantheon.
Famous character. Yeah. Athena. Okay. But yeah, like, I'm playing this character that these people have played, and now we kind of understand each other, and it's just fun.
Yeah.
Like, I always love that sort of thing.
I do, too. I'm very excited for everything, all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And especially Wednesday Addams. Please go watch Wednesday. It was very good. I loved it a lot. It has its issues. Jenna is amazing. That's all that matters. Okay. Final thing on our list today is, which Rick Ryder Presents villain are you? We're going to take another quiz.
Woohoo!
We're going to try to do this fast so that we can get into our main discussion.
Yes.
So, what made you become evil? I was born evil. I'm not evil. I just know better than everyone else. My family made me do it. I've had a difficult life. I was rejected by society. Tried being good. It was boring. For power and wealth, duh. I feel like I'm torn between my family made me do it and I've had a difficult life.
I'm pretty sure I'm gonna go with, I'm not evil, I just know better than everyone. Because I don't think I'm evil. I just think other people are wrong.
Yeah.
So, like, that's gotta be it, right?
I'm gonna go with, I've had a difficult life. Pick an extracurricular activity. Student government, film club, ghost hunting, intramural sports, engineering club, musical theater, volunteer work.
Film club!
Oh, I thought you were going to go with musical theater.
And musical theater's great too, but film club!
I'm going with ghost hunting.
That's a good one.
Where is your ideal secret base located? Tallest tower in the largest city in the world, in an alternate plane of reality, military facility, stately mansion, on the moon, deep in the woods, 5-star hotel on the beach.
I mean, secret base, it's gotta be a stately mansion.
Okay.
The secret basement full of gadgets.
I feel like in an alternate plane of reality or deep in the woods. I kind of want to go with deep in the woods because I truly want to live deep in the woods. And I feel like if I was a villain, I'd be like rejecting society.
Well, if it's any consolation, my stately mansion, it's in the woods.
Okay. What would you do with an army of loyal followers? Hang out and watch movies. Train them into an effective fighting unit. They can do whatever they want as long as they pay me. Do all my dirty work for me. Tell them all to dress exactly like me. I would rather be left alone, thanks. Make fun of them all the time for being weak. I would say do all my dirty work for me because I want my hands to be clean.
I mean, I also just want to watch movies.
Yeah. You can watch movies.
In film club with my loyal followers.
That's true.
We're watching movies.
Yeah.
I'm a terrible villain.
That's a good thing. What's your ideal Friday night? I work on Friday nights, clubbing all night long, attending a giant party in my honor, enjoying a nice meal with close friends, a peaceful night's sleep for once, binging a new show, stay in and play video games. Mine's definitely video games.
I was gonna say, like, if it's your ideal Friday night, why are you working?
That's true.
Because I would say I work Friday nights, because I usually do.
Yeah.
But my ideal Friday night, I would also like, I could say play video games, but I think I'm going to say binging a new show. Because that's always fun on a Friday.
What's your favorite type of monster? Demons, zombies, werewolves, dragons, ghosts, vampires, politicians. Okay, Reed Riordan, I hear you.
I'm just going to leave that one right
there. I see you.
I'm going with dragons.
I'm going with, I was going to go with dragons, but I also kind of like zombies.
You do like zombies.
Like, not like eating me.
Do, do, do.
This is very difficult.
Do, do.
I'm going to go with...
Do, do, do. Do, 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 do.
I'm going to go with monsters because I don't know what the connotation here. I mean, dragons.
I was going to say, monsters is the general category.
I'm going to go with dragons since I don't know what the connotation is.
Good call.
Okay, pick a breakfast food. Hard-boiled eggs, bacon, cereal, scrambled eggs... Tofu scramble, oatmeal, coffee, black. That's it.
It's gotta be bacon.
It's gotta be bacon. Who's gonna pick anything other than vegans?
I mean, I like scrambled eggs. Cereal's fine. That's all good stuff. But if I'm picking a food, it's bacon.
Yeah. Favorite Greek god? Zeus, Poseidon, Athena, Ares, Artemis, Apollo, Hades.
Hades! This is not easy for me. Because I don't know if I have a favorite.
Athena's not your favorite?
I mean, I like her, but Artemis? I also think Artemis is cool, and, like, yeah. Poseidon is usually pretty chill, and I like water, and, like, that's cool, and I don't like Ares, so I can say it's not Ares, but, like, Apollo is also really fun. I'm gonna say Artemis, just because. I feel like she'd be a very interesting person.
Yeah, I agree.
Slash god.
Which type of animal sidekick would you choose? Cat, snake, falcon, bear, monkey, fox, or pig? I mean, cat would have been my go-to, but I like a good fox.
Well, see, I'm thinking for their usefulness, either a falcon or a monkey, because Abu is a very good sidekick for Aladdin, and he does a lot of fun
tricks. But you know what? If I had a bear, that would mess some people up.
It's true. I would be terrified of my own sidekick, so I will not be choosing bear. But, like, a falcon, like, if you think of Sean Hugh from Mulan, like, his falcon is also very smart and does all these useful, nifty things for him.
Yeah.
Nobody wants a pet snake, because they're just Nagini and no...
I mean, I would take
a snake. No, I mean, not as your animal sidekick. If you're a villain and... Yeah, I couldn't do a snake. I couldn't do it.
I'm gonna go with bear. I feel like bear's very useful.
I think I'm gonna go falcon.
Okay.
Just because it's so cool.
Can send messages.
And they also make that scary, like, rah, noise and, like, strike fear into the hearts of my
last head. Question.
Yes.
What would you be doing if you weren't trying to conquer the world? Retire to a small, peaceful farm. Go back to school. Open a restaurant. Go on an extended vacation. Finally redecorate my house. Spend more time with family. I've already conquered the world.
I'm gonna choose extended vacation. That is what I would like to do.
I think that I would probably also go on vacation, because that just feels like if you've conquered the world, maybe I have a lot of money and I just travel around. See, I didn't want to cause evil. I just wanted a vacation.
Right. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah. I knew I was gonna get her.
Who'd you get?
The cave bear goddess.
I got someone I do not know.
Oh. Okay, wait. Let me read mine first. It says, the patron goddess of the Gom clan from the last fallen star. Deep down, you might be a pretty evil person. But if so, you do a very good job of hiding it. Okay. Most people believe you're a kind-hearted, compassionate person, and that's the way you like it. After all, it's easier to manipulate others for your own selfish ends if you already possess their trust. I feel like if I was actually evil, this actually would be the way that I would go about it, pretending to be really nice and then manipulating them.
Mm.
Okay, who'd you get?
I think you pronounce this as Apuch.
Oh, okay.
From Stormrunner?
Yeah, Stormrunner, okay.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
A-P-U-C-H?
A-H-P-U-C-H.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. I don't know these books at all. The god of death and former ruler of a lot of letters. X-I-B apostrophe A-L-B apostrophe A. Zibalba? I have no idea.
I don't know either.
I do not know.
Sorry.
The Maya underworld from the Stormrunner trilogy and the Lords of Night. Despite some evil deeds in your past, you've mellowed out in recent years. You may have waged war against the Maya gods in previous centuries, but you've successfully completed a redemption arc thanks to the help of some new friends and allies. Mm-hmm. And I am a very attractive man in a suit with a ponytail.
Ooh.
I'm good. That sounds like fun. Let's do this.
I have a very beautiful woman plus, with long flowing hair.
Plus, apparently, I have already had, I've redeemed myself. Yeah. So, I'm good with that.
Yeah, I'm still super evil. So, you know, what are you gonna do?
Yeah, sometimes you evil, it happens.
Sometimes you evil. Okay, let's jump right into our discussion for this week. This is kind of reflective of the recipes that we chose a couple of weeks ago for the gods. We wanted to do something for the holidays, and we thought, what better than to try to come up with gifts for the gods. And I had some fun with this. We kind of decided, like, it could be a normal gift, it could be a magical gift, whatever it was, it had to be something realistic that the demigods could, like, actually get their hands on. And I found that I, like, it was pretty easy for me. I think I went through and pretty quick order.
I had a couple that kind of stumped me, and yeah. Some of mine are less impressive. Like, some of my answers are like, yeah, this is really cool, this is a perfect gift. And some of them I'm like, I stopped caring, I'm giving this to Zeus. I had trouble, again, with Zeus and Hermes.
Oh.
I don't know why. Hermes, yeah. I think, is because I didn't know what part of his personality and all of the things he's a god of to, like, focus on.
Yeah.
So I think I just got a little lost and was like, I don't know! Like, I want to give you something to help travelers or give you something to, you know, I don't know, help the
thief.
Right. Like, I don't know what to give you. So yeah. So some of mine are a little less impressive, but there's a couple that I think, like, nail it. And I'm like, yeah.
That's cool. Well, let's start with Zeus. What did you have for him?
Okay, so, again, he gave me some trouble. So this was kind of at the end of my night of brain racking. And I thought up a celestial bronze statue of himself designed to absorb and hold the charges of electricity from his lightning. And I thought of this because he could use this statue in two ways, pretty much. One, he can use it as an energy source for humans and absorb all of their praise and adoration because he helped solve the energy crisis that we're currently in. And, you know, he loves being praised, so, like, he would love that. But also, if he's in a more vengeful jerk mood, he can use it as a weapon against his enemies because he can use that supercharged statue and, like, strike it once more and it'll, like yeah. lightning everything around, which would be really cool. So I figured that kind of hits on happy Zeus and not happy Zeus at the same time.
I love this. I never would have guessed that you struggled with this because I think this is a genius gift because, of course, he would like a giant statue of himself. And being able to use it as a weapon in addition to that, I feel like is just genius. I really loved it.
He's a very mercurial god. Yes. And he does what he wants and when he feels like it. So yeah, it had to have, like, multi-purposes. It had to kind of hit on both sides of his thought process.
Yeah. It's not that I had trouble with Zeus so much as I didn't really want to get him a gift. And I kind of wanted to get him, like, a tie with lightning bolts on it or something because, like, he doesn't deserve anything better than that. But I did come up with a master lightning bolt carrying case so he doesn't lose it anymore, aka a golf bag for his weapon.
Yeah.
That feels like a very dad, like, I don't know what to get my dad. We don't have the best relationship. I'll just get him a tie. I'll just get him a golf bag, you know? Yep. So.
Yeah, no, I think that works.
Yeah.
And it can even be kind of lightning shaped.
Yeah, oh, that's true. Well, yeah, it kind of would.
It would be kind of cool.
That, like, would make sense.
Like, not entirely, because you have to be able to put the lightning bolt in it, but still, it would be cool.
I love that. Okay, so for Hera, take it away. Please.
This was the first one I came up with. Like, I sat down, thought about Zeus for 5 minutes, was like, no, I'm going to save that for later. And then I thought this up and went, oh, this is perfect.
I literally didn't want to put something down because this is so perfect.
So Hera, from if I were giving her a present, she would get some Apple AirTags so that she can keep an eye on Zeus.
That is, like, so perfect.
It's all she wants. Yeah. She just wants to know what he's up to, because then she can stop him before he does idiotic things, like cheat on her again.
Or, like, show up in the middle of it and be like, caught you.
Right. Like, put an air tag in his sandal or, you know, like,
stuff it in his beard.
Hide it in his hair. I don't know. But, like, I feel like this would be very useful for her. She would be able to keep an eye on him and stop him from making idiotic mistakes.
Yeah.
And making her mad.
Yeah.
Or just be mad earlier.
Yeah, that's true. It's more efficient.
Right?
I saw what you wrote, and I was like, oh, that is so good. And I was like, what if I gave her, like, a mirror to, like, watch things with? And I was like, that's a little too close to what you were going for.
Yeah.
So I decided to kind of go with a formal painting of her family that she can hang on Mount Olympus so that she can pretend everything is fine and they're all happy.
I mean...
Because she always does try to put up this front of, like, no, we're the perfect family, and, like... You know,
yeah.
I'm a great mother/wife and all of that.
I can go over the hearth that Hestia is tending. I can see it. Yeah. I think that would be a really good gift. I think she'd like that.
And that way, whoever's painting it can, like, fix anything. Like, if Hephaestus is in there, then, like, you know, she could fix him because that's what Hera would do.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course.
Oh, Hera.
All right. Next up is Poseidon, which felt like a very big one to me just because it's Percy's dad.
I know. And my gift is the best thing I could come up with. And I was so disappointed in myself because I had all these ideas and I was like, oh, it's got to be epic, though. It's got to be so... No. What I came up with was a magical toy, much like if you've ever watched a National Geographic thing, they have these, like, outlines that look like seals that they attach to the back of boats.
Yeah.
That they, like, use to, like, test sharks or, like, tempt sharks so that they can, like, tag them for stuff right. or whatever.
Yeah.
Something, like, in akin to that, a toy that will stand up to sharks and whales and dolphins that he can throw and it will sink and they can go fetch it, and then if they can't find it or lose it, will magically appear in his pocket, much like Riptide.
Yeah.
Or in his hand.
I like this. I think that's very wholesome and encourages him to relax and right. have some downtime.
Well, and that's what I figured. He's, especially in the book we're reading right now, he's had a rough go of it,
yeah.
and he's gonna need some downtime and some time to just, like, absorb the wonders of the ocean and enjoy being amongst the creatures that exist in the world he is god of. You know. So I figured, yeah, plus him and Percy can, like, play with the dolphins together.
Yeah.
And it would be fun.
I like that. I did kind of go grander than this. I kind of went for, like, a symbolic gift almost because I feel like he would really appreciate that. I was also working under the guise of, like, he's kind of bored because he's been master of the ocean for so long.
Yes.
And he's seen so much that I was like, wouldn't it be cool if another god or, like, the naiads or something created a new sea creature to, like, switch things up for him a little bit? Then he could, like... watch it
mm-hmm.
and, like, study it and try to decide what its habits are and stuff. I feel like he would find that interesting. Or help humanity discover a deep sea creature that already exists that we don't know about yet, and then have them name it after him in his honor. Kind of like when you buy somebody a star and you name
yeah.
the star after them. Name a sea creature after Poseidon.
I think I like both of these, but I think the second one especially gets me
yeah.
because there's so much going on in the ocean that we just don't have any
mm-hmm.
idea about because we can't get that deep. We can't get good footage of things that are that deep. So, like, yeah, I think
yeah.
that's really cool.
And I think he would really appreciate it because we know that the gods literally live off of our worship. So any reminder that he's, like, still out there,
mm-hmm.
I think would, like, benefit him in a lot of ways.
Oh.
So, yeah. Okay, what about Hades?
Yeah, this one's another lame one for me. This is probably the one I'm most disappointed in. Because I wanted to come up with something, like, really fun and something to kind of remind him that being the god of the underworld isn't, like, it's a lot of work, but, it, you know, he's also very powerful and whatever. Like, I wanted to come up with something that would just kind of remind him that, yeah, you might not be on Olympus, but life isn't too bad. And I couldn't come up with anything. So instead, he gets crowd control cattle railings. I'm sure he needs more. It's one of those, like, I know you need this, but
yeah.
I'm going to buy it for you so that you can buy yourself something you want. Because he might want an Xbox, but I didn't know. So I'm buying you the cattle railings that I know you need so that you can spend your money on something fun.
That's so funny. My brain actually went down the same path as, like, what do we know about Hades? Okay, so he's, like, the god of the underworld, so anything with, like, bones and stuff. And then I was like, well, he's so rich, like, there's no need to, like, get him more riches or anything like that. And I was like, okay, he works a lot, so it's got to be something that makes his job more fulfilling. Not necessarily easier, but, like, just more fulfilling maybe for him. So I was like, what if Annabeth designed an underworld expansion so that he can fill it up with a bunch of people. Like, you know, it's a new area of the underworld. That would be kind of a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Or just give him, like, a new monster, like Cerberus, to help guard the gates. I feel like he might be the hardest god to shop for.
It's just, he's both undervalued and also insanely busy. Yeah. He's not on Olympus. He, you know, everything has to do with the dead, so he doesn't have, like, a kitschy, like, oh, he's the sun god, so you can give him something solar-powered, like, right. Oh, because we'll get there in a minute. But, like, you know, it's not something like that. Like, it's hard. It's yeah. hard to come up with a gift for Hades.
Yeah. I actually had some difficulty with Athena, but I really liked your idea.
Yeah. She is the goddess of battle wisdom, mm-hmm. and so therefore she is constantly drawing up plays and things for battle, and so I came up with a magical item. It would be like a coach's whiteboard, which if you've ever played basketball, you know, or soccer or any sport really, it's a white whiteboard that has a permanent black outline of the court, of the boundaries and all of that, so that coaches can, like, show you where to set up for plays and things. But hers is magical in that the lines are quote-unquote permanent, but they adjust to show the topography or the elevation and landmarks of whatever battlefield she's fighting on or going to be fighting on.
Yeah.
And so she can design battle strategy on this whiteboard.
I love that. Yeah. That's so inventive. Yeah. And I think she would really appreciate that.
That's what I was thinking. It has to be something useful and like, not super special, but, like, I want her to have something practical that she is worth carrying around.
Right.
Because otherwise, she's just gonna leave it.
Yeah, it's gonna be in a closet right. somewhere. She'll be like, oh yeah, loved that, and
yeah,
then move
thanks
on.
So much.
Yeah.
Put it in the closet.
I kind of had the same line of thinking where I was like, it had to be something she would use, because I don't think that she's not the kind of goddess who lives for frivolous things. And so I was like, okay, I kind of want to get her some new armor, because it hasn't really been updated in eons, millennia.
Yes.
And so I was like, what if we get her new armor that's a little more modern, but with that classic touch, something reminiscent of her original armor that is just a little bit newer, a little bit fancier, where I feel like she would, like, feel good in it, even if she didn't want to admit it.
I like it.
Yeah.
She could use a reinvent, I mean.
Yeah.
You need a little something yeah. new.
Exactly.
New outfit.
Yeah. Okay, so Ares wasn't a difficult one.
He was the one I didn't want to buy a present for.
Yeah,
so I didn't put any thought into it, and I just threw something down. Because I don't care about Ares.
I love this, though.
Well, it's a lifetime supply of Red Bull. Because
does he need the Red Bull?
Probably not. But, A, I think he would love the joke of telling Apollo that he drank or he consumed a Red Bull this morning.
Oh, Kristen! That is so funny!
Like, I could see him, like, constantly poking Apollo about this.
That is so funny. Oh, I take it away. That one is so good.
In addition to, A, being amped up for battle anytime he needs it, and, like, all of that. But, yeah, the Red Cow's Red Bull thing
okay.
is, yeah.
I have to say, though, this is genius. You're a genius. Full stop. However, if this had been Hermes' gift, Red Bull gives you wings?
Oh, man. I didn't
what?
Even think of that.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And
funny.
He was the one that ate the cows.
He was.
Yeah.
Because yes. I looked it up last night, because I was like, wait, it was Ares, wasn't it? I don't know. I can't remember. It might have been Hermes. And I looked it up, and it was Hermes, but I was like, I still like this for Ares.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, Ares would definitely still rub it in Apollo's face.
But yes, it would have been very good
yeah.
for Hermes.
Oh, my gosh. I would have just made a crown out of paper and put it on your head. That's so great. Mine's kind of basic, but I feel like it's something he legitimately would enjoy. A hunting trip with his favorite children, not all of his children, definitely just his favorite children, and a giant feast afterwards.
Of course.
It's definitely an Aries thing to enjoy.
Yes.
Violence and death, and then food.
Yeah. And especially meat.
Yeah. Yes.
Yep. I'm pretty sure that's all he wants out of life.
I laughed out loud when I saw Dionysus.
I mean, we read the chapter. It was in my head. And so this gift just fully formed, popped in my head, and I put it down. Because I was like, he's the party god. You can buy him all kinds of stuff. You can buy him anything that's going to make a good party, and he's going to enjoy the gift. Because he's Dionysus. That's what he loves. But in the chapter today, we see him kind of freaking out over not beating Pac-Man. Yeah. And so he needs an original Pac-Man arcade machine. Like, yeah. He needs to be able to practice on his own and impress people with his Pac-Man skills. Yeah. So, yeah, that it was the only thing in my head. I just put it down and was done.
Yeah, this was so great. Okay, so Dionysus' gift from me starts off a theme that you will see for the rest of the gods that we have on here.
Okay.
And the gift that I wanted to give him was 12 uninterrupted hours free of his curse. I feel like he would definitely appreciate that. However, I would have to go to Zeus and ask him for this, and I feel like Zeus would require, like, minimum 3 favors for this, but I feel like it would be worth it if Mr. D is at camp all the time. Like, maybe he wouldn't pick on me as much or, like, slide me some things when people didn't notice, you know?
It's true.
Like, yeah.
It's true. He's definitely going to treat you better if you give him the opportunity to...
Or not treat me worse.
Right.
It would be, like, ignoring me, not picking on me.
Yeah. I can see that.
Which could be worth it. So, yeah. Okay, so what did you pick for Apollo?
So, okay, I talked about, you know, the sun and giving the sun god something solar-powered, and that's exactly what I did. I gave Apollo a solar charger for his phone and electronics so that he can keep up on his social media.
I mean...
And never run out of power.
Because yeah.
He is, you know, he's the god of the sun, and it just made sense to me.
Yeah.
Plus, that way he'll always have music on his phone.
True.
He'll always have access to all of his electronic needs.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I definitely feel like he would appreciate something that has to do with him being on social media more.
Right.
100%.
Yeah. Agreed.
I was actually pretty proud of mine for this one because we had recently been talking about the Hermes myth, and that's kind of what reminded me of this. But if I was Will Solace, I think I would try to invent a new instrument for Apollo. That's something Apollo would, like, really appreciate as a gift. But, like, also, how do you one-up that next year? You can't.
Right.
Like, that's as good as it gets.
Yeah. That's pretty big. You can't duplicate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Save it for a big year. But, yes, that would be a good gift.
Am I right in guessing that we both had a little bit of trouble with Artemis?
I mean, generally a little, yes. Yeah. I immediately thought of something to just kind of make her living space peaceful and give her calmness. And so I thought of, like, something relating to the moon, because she is kind of... a lot of her stories and things relate to the moon. And so I was just kind of shopping around, and I found this really cool moon lamp that, like, it's shaped like the moon. It has, like, surface texture like the moon, and it floats above its base like the moon, and it glows. And it would just bring some delicate, peaceful energy to her bedroom and allow her to sleep soundly.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of... Because I also thought of some sort of hunting trip for her, but I was like, she hunts all the time. It's like literally her job.
Yeah.
So I decided to go to the opposite of that, but kind of along the same length as you. I wanted to have her relax. I wanted it to be a peaceful environment. I was like, what's better than a spa day with the girlies?
I mean,
I feel like she would appreciate that. And because she generally shows herself to be a child or a young woman, it's something that she could do with the hunters who are about her age, and they could all bond. Like, that would be a good bonding experience for
especially
them.
Especially if it was, like, a natural spa.
Yeah.
So, like, they're
like
using
a hot,
like,
spring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be something she'd really love. Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Hephaestus.
Okay. So, for him, I went with something simple, but also something, like, thoughtful that would not complicate his life, because he has a lot of irons in the fire.
That's great.
I'm just full of this stuff today. He's just got a lot going on, and I didn't want to complicate his life with making him tote around this present. So, I found a really cool necklace. I actually found one on Etsy, because I wanted to, like, literally find a tactile object that would be kind of close. And it's just of, like, a smith's hammer. And I figured, like, that is one of his symbols, and getting him just a simple reminder that, like, he's a valued member of the pantheon of gods, and that, you know, it's just something to remind him of the forges and everything when he takes a break or whatever. And I figured something just simple and well-crafted would be something he'd appreciate.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I really like the idea of something that doesn't complicate his life, that doesn't, like, add more to, you know...
Yeah.
Because I imagine him dressing very simply and
yeah.
probably not a jewelry person, but this is so symbolic that I feel like he would wear it
yeah.
and appreciate it. I tried to engage his mind in my gift because I wanted something that was, like, very difficult because I feel like he's so intelligent, he's so good at manipulating things and inventing things and like tinkering with things that he needs something that will present a challenge to him. And so I decided basically take one of those 3D wooden puzzles, but bigger, like room size.
Mm-hmm.
It's made out of metal. And it's a lot more complicated, and maybe it explodes if he doesn't get to it in time. Because I feel like he would enjoy something like that.
He
like
would.
The challenge of it.
He absolutely
so,
would.
Yeah, and I wanted something that he could, like, take apart and put back together. And initially I wanted something that, like, he could take apart and put back together in a different way to create something new. But I really like the idea of a puzzle that he had to solve.
Yeah, I think he'd like that.
Yeah. Okay, Aphrodite.
So, in addition to being all the things we know about Aphrodite, I just kind of checked Wikipedia just as a thing. And there was something on her page that kind of jumped out at my brain. And it was that in addition to being the goddess of romance and love and all of those things, she is also the goddess of prostitutes.
Okay.
Which is related.
Yes, I can understand that.
So... I figured...
This makes more sense now.
...that a Blu-ray copy of Pretty Woman watching an actual prostitute character find love and fulfilling
yeah.
happy love would be a really fun way to spend an evening with Aphrodite.
Yeah. That's very detailed and thoughtful. And I was just like, oh yeah, she'd probably appreciate that movie. But the explanation of it makes so much more sense.
Yeah.
I love that. That's so great.
She's getting movie night with Julia Roberts,
yeah.
and it's going to be fun.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. I couldn't get the idea of a mirror out of my head because I wanted to use that for Hera, and I was like, oh, but that would also be, like, perfect for Aphrodite. We know she's, like, probably a little vain. And I was like, the fanciest mirror money can buy, but enchanted to show her dressed in all the latest fashions. And I figured it's probably not hard for her to just magic herself into some new clothes, but what about literally the latest, like up to the millisecond latest fashions all around the world for her to like shop through and
yeah.
be like, oh, I like that one on me, and then she puts it on herself.
Yeah.
I thought that would be useful and feed into her vanity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. She, no. There's no doubt she would love
She would
that.
Definitely brag about, like, oh, yes, this dress was created 6 seconds ago, you
yeah.
know?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, Demeter.
Again, reminding myself the things about Demeter. Like, they're, you know, general things that we kind of know, but I wanted to look. And she is the goddess of green, well, you know, the goddess of the harvest and things like that. So... I figured she would love an It's Corn sweatshirt. If you have been on TikTok,
I can't believe
you know the It's Corn song. And I just have this feeling that she finds it charming.
Yeah.
And is just thoroughly pleased with all of the appreciation for the one of the greens that she has, you know, allowed to prosper on our earth so
yeah.
much.
Yeah. I feel like the more people appreciate corn, the more people appreciate her. So it kind of goes hand
right?
in hand.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So she's getting an It's Corn. It's, you know, it has the juice sweatshirt. And I don't know if she'd wear it, but I think it would make her smile and remind her of this time in our world where we were all appreciating corn more.
Yeah, that's hilarious. And, oh my goodness. Okay, so like I said, there's a theme to some of the rest of my gifts. And in this one, if Demeter was my mother, I would negotiate with Hades to allow Persephone an extra month on Earth. Which means we would get a milder winter, and I don't think anybody's going to be super mad about that.
No.
And I was like, Hades would only require 2 favors instead of 3, because he's a little bit nicer than Zeus.
Yeah. A little more reasonable.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. That's definitely a good one.
She would... Demeter would definitely appreciate that.
Yes.
But then I feel like she would be sad next year when, like... Maybe it would be, like, an every year gift. She knows it's coming, but, like, it's better.
Right.
But then, would that change the climate of the Earth? Would that cause... problems?
What's another problem?
That's not my responsibility.
Nope. We'll let somebody else worry about that today.
Yeah. We got two left.
Yes.
Next one is Hermes.
Which I am... It's a terrible gift. It's a terrible gift. But I don't
know what to give him. Red Bull.
I should have given him Red Bull. I didn't think about it. I forgot about the wings thing. It just completely went out of my head. So he can either share Red Bull with Aries. Yeah. Or he is getting a margarita maker for the road.
Yeah.
I was trying to come up with something that would not necessarily be like a bulky pain in the butt thing for him to tote around, but something that would allow him to make travelers feel more welcome. So I figured on his travels, since he's constantly out and about, everybody loves a good margarita. And so he has one in his pocket that it's easy to set up and he can instantly have margaritas. I just figured that would bring joy to others and bring joy to travelers, and therefore it would make him happy too.
Yeah. I feel like he would
kind of lame. It's kind of a lame gift, but they can't all be winners.
I kind of like, you know, a margarita for the road. I kind of like that.
Who doesn't want...
dangerous, but...
Yeah. But I'm not saying, like, get them drunk. I'm saying once they've arrived at their destination, then you give them a margarita.
You can just pull out the margarita maker. Yeah. I decided to feed into his thievery and trickery side.
See, that was another angle. I tried to go and could not find the right thing.
Yeah. And... mine was a Hephaestus-made trap that he could spring on Zeus, specifically, just for funsies. Mm-hmm. And Hephaestus would require, you know, like I said, theme, but Hephaestus wouldn't require a favor. He would require another puzzle because the first one was so fun.
I believe that.
Yeah.
I believe that.
I thought that was cute.
Yeah. No, I like it.
All right. Hestia brings us full circle. It brings us to the end. And I feel like she deserves kind of a wholesome gift, you know? So what would you choose for Hestia?
Mine might be the most ridiculous thing in the world.
I
have recently seen these, I think it was on Shark Tank, to be completely honest.
Okay.
I did. I saw a clip of one of these on Shark Tank. It's a human-sized, very comfortable, I guess, dog bed. But for people, that is very fuzzy and warm and comforting and just really comfortable and wonderful, that she can keep by the hearth so that when she's stoked the fire and it looks like it's burning warm and well and not going to go out, she can just tuck herself in right next to the fire and be warm and comfy and... I feel like she would like that.
I love this. I also love that it says early bird price only $284.40.
I know, it's insane.
The original price is $334.
They're insane, yes.
Why?
The pricing is crazy. The best for Hestia, I guess. But I feel like it would be cute.
I got her a gift that wasn't material, but something that I think she would truly appreciate. Because at this point, we know Hestia. We kind of know what she's all about. And I said, one night where all the Olympian gods, plus Hades, gather around the fire of her hearth to toast marshmallows, and everyone promises to be civil for one whole hour. It's a lot. It's a huge gift. It's a lot to ask of these gods. But Hestia would melt. Pun intended.
She would absolutely, she would love every moment.
Yeah. I think that it would make her hearth stronger. It would warm her heart. She would love it.
Like, I can see a night where they're not all present all at the same time except for this hour. So, you have Zeus and you know, the gods that he gets along with, Apollo and some of his children all show up kind of early. And then you see, Ares and them kind of come in and everybody's present for a single hour. And then Zeus leaves. And then others, you know, I can just see it being a very wonderful night with a solid hour where everyone is behaving themselves.
Yeah.
She would love that.
I think so, too. That was fun. I feel
it was good fun.
Yeah, we got some really good ideas in there, some really funny things. So if you guys have any suggestions for what you think the gods would appreciate, or even funny things, we didn't do any gag gifts, really.
Not really.
Not on the gods themselves. My Hermes ones was a little bit for Zeus, but... if you guys have any ideas, funny or otherwise sincere, please let us know. You know where to contact us. Would appreciate hearing from you. But now we are going to jump into our next chapter for The Last Olympian.
So this week we are discussing chapter 15, entitled Chiron Throws a Party. Percy flies overhead, taking stock of all the skirmishes below as the Battle of Manhattan rages on. He sees that, to the south, only blocks from the Empire State Building, the enemy continues to advance. The hunters set up a barricade on one side, Grover, the Nature Spirits, and the Demeter Cabin turned another street into a jungle, while Jake Mason and some Hephaestus campers led an army of statues on another street. When Percy sees Annabeth and two other Athena kids battling a Hyperborean giant, he leaps from blackjack onto the giant's head. Percy hits its weak spot behind the knee, and they continue to battle alongside each other for another hour, destroying monsters and knocking out enemy demigods. Soon, they were protecting Olympus with only a single city block the whole way around. They all continue to fight. Annabeth even dons her invisibility cap and surprises monsters from within their own ranks. Cronos appears in a golden chariot, clearly pleased with his force's efforts. Just as Percy was going to issue an order to fall back to the Empire State Building's doors, a horn is heard. It's not the hunters, they're already there. Soon, the Party Pony Army comes racing forward, firing clouds of arrows, killing hundreds of monsters at once. Soon, Percy can see hundreds upon hundreds of party ponies from chapters all across the country, united. The enemy forces flee, so Chiron calls the defensive forces back. They condense and form a barrier two blocks out on all sides from the Empire State Building. While Chiron's arrival with his forces is definitely good news, he also has bad news to deliver too. Typhon will arrive in Manhattan the next day, as Dionysus has disappeared and Hephaestus has been hurt and needs time to heal. Talia and Chiron go off to shore up their defenses, lay some traps, and also keep the party ponies from over-imbibing on the root beer, leaving Percy and Annabeth alone for what could be the last time? They discuss Percy's visions, courtesy of Hestia and Prometheus. He tells her what he saw from their past, as well as what Ethan Nakamura mentioned about Luke still being present in Kronos' body. Percy wants to protect Annabeth from Luke, but she isn't ready to believe that her friend cannot be saved. They go quiet, and Percy looks around at the makeshift field hospital. Then suddenly, he's in a dingy bar, and Mr. D is beside him, ordering a Diet Coke. He has a warning for Percy. If the gods fall, then everything attached to them fades as well. Western civilization as we know it would fail. Plus, Kronos has not yet reached his final form. In the next day at most, he will be able to take true Titan King form, which is 10 times as strong as the true form of a god. Fabulous! Lastly, Mr. D asks Percy to protect his son Pollux. Percy promises, and poof, he's back on Fifth Avenue beside Annabeth. Then, Percy sees Paul Blofus' blue Prius. Percy panics, and poof, Pandora's jar is found buckled into the back seat. Chiron explains that it will continue to follow Percy and will appear when he is at his weakest. Suddenly, Percy can hear a helicopter, and the Dare Enterprises copter can be seen. Once it hits the barrier of the Morpheus curse, it starts to plummet to the earth. Annabeth summons a Pegasus named Guido, and they race off to save the day.
Yay!
Oh. All of these chapters. They're just so long.
This one felt a little lighter to me, a little more streamlined, not as many, like,
there's
scenes crammed together into one chapter.
There's a lot of battle detailing, but, like, you can kind of just say, like, you know, there's a lot of battle.
Yeah. And I also appreciate that this battle isn't like, okay, we have one fight and, like, it's over. Like, this is something they've been doing for, like, a day now, and they're potentially thinking they'll have to do it for another day, and that as, like, the sun comes up and then, like, they can rest and they have to fight at night and that sort of thing, like... It's just, it makes it more realistic and heavier and, you know, there's more chances for casualties and you can see how much they're struggling, which I appreciate seeing in a middle grade book.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's definitely very real. It's not just a, you know, glossing over of battle, like, oh yeah, no, like, he talks about friends of theirs are disappearing and people are just missing that he didn't know what happened to them and things like that, like... Familiar faces that he's not seeing anymore. And yeah. That, it just, it keeps it real. It keeps it from becoming just, like, a show.
Yeah, exactly. And I just gotta say, since we're talking about the battle in general, if I were invincible, I would take the time to jump off of Blackjack and skydive without a parachute, because he got shot and it didn't hurt him. He didn't even notice. Yeah. So he could, like, superhero land from Blackjack's back and be fine, as long as he didn't, like, land on his back.
I mean, that's kind of sort of what he did here. He just landed on a giant's head.
Yeah. So, just saying, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I agree. It would be fun to, like, test the limits a little bit.
Yeah.
And just see what you can get away with. Basically, the battle is raging, and barricades, jungles, statue armies are not enough to hold off Kronos, and so, as his army battles, he gets closer and closer and closer to the Empire State Building, and he's finally seen, I think it's in the sky, on, like, a golden chariot. I couldn't tell if it was, like, on the ground.
I thought it was on the ground.
Okay, I couldn't tell from the description, really. But, like, Percy says he thought it was the sunset. So, like, it could, yeah, be on the ground, way off on the horizon.
Yeah.
But he can basically feel Kronos' presence, and, like, he sees him, and he's on his way. And in that exact moment, reinforcements arrive! And it's the best reinforcements ever.
This made me very emotional. I started crying when I was reading this. I think it's just, like, that relief that somebody is there. And it's that, like, I mean, I cry during fight scenes in movies. Kristen knows this. It makes me very emotional. And I think it's just because, like, you're fighting for something you believe in. And it's that, like, epic moment where, like, everything comes together. And the fact that Percy was really down and out. And then now here's this glimmer of hope in the form of a centaur army.
Yes.
Which is so random and weird. But, you know, I'll take it.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, it did. It made me emotional.
And they're very skilled fighters.
They, like, are, yeah. They're ridiculous, but they can fight.
Exactly. As they come racing through, they're firing, you know, again, I said clouds of arrows, but it really is, like, there's so many arrows, and they're taking out 500 monsters at a time, and it's making a difference. Mm-hmm. Not turning the tide yet, but it's definitely helping them in their quest to keep them away from the Empire State Building.
I mean, this has to be such a glimmer of hope. Such a resurgence of, like, we can do this with the demigods, because there were only 70 demigods. Mm-hmm. And now there are 500 centaurs on top of that.
Yes.
That's a huge difference in size of your army.
And, I mean, they weren't expecting any help. They knew the gods were otherwise occupied. There was nobody to come. Like, they're kind of miffed that Clarice and the Ares cabin aren't there, but, like, they don't know of who to call on. There's nobody they can reach out to for help. So to know that Chiron just shows up, he knew they needed help.
Right.
Shows up with a massive force. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so yes, Chiron has shown up, and the party ponies help to scare the living daylights out of the Kronos forces, and so they retreat.
Yeah.
And it's basically daybreak, so they go back to their camp, and our demigods get another break.
Yeah.
Which is desperately needed.
It is desperately needed, and I loved seeing that Percy was a little hopeful, because with the arrival of the centaurs, who have, like, distance / not really time warp magic, more like distance magic, but they were able to get into the city, and Percy's very hopeful that this means more reinforcements can get through. And I feel like, even though he didn't say it, he was specifically thinking of Clarice in the Ares cabin.
Yeah.
And I just love that he's holding out hope for them still.
Yeah. I mean, this is a battle for everyone, and I feel like Ares is fighting Typhon alongside all the gods.
Right.
Like, at some point, Clarice has to want to get in on this. She has to be, she's not just going to let the gods fall. Like, she's got to do something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think you're right. Okay, so now that the party ponies are there, and they've taken a break for the day, and they're getting all the forces together and kind of healing up wounds and things like that, Chiron and Talia leave our happy couple alone, and they have a pretty significant chat.
They do.
Percy tells Annabeth all the things that he's not been keeping from her, but just kind of holding back with, because he doesn't want they were fighting. They had so many things to worry about. He didn't know how she was going to react to all of this knowledge that he suddenly has about her childhood, about how things went with Luke. And so he tells her about the visions he's seen from Hestia. He tells her about what Prometheus allowed him to see, including Ethan Nakamura's thoughts on Luke Kronos and how present Luke actually is. And it's not, there's nothing groundbreaking about this chat, but it's necessary.
Yeah.
Percy and Annabeth needed to have time to have this heart-to-heart so that he knows that she is aware that he knows this stuff. Like, she needs to know what he's aware of. Mm-hmm. And also, she needs to know that Talia doesn't believe she's capable of fighting Luke. Not because she couldn't defeat him if she wanted to, but because we're not sure mentally she's in the headspace to take down her friend.
Right, yeah.
And I think it's just a very necessary step in this whole thing is for them to touch base and just let each other know where they're at.
Yeah, I think that this is incredibly important. I totally agree with you because I feel like throughout this book, Annabeth hasn't been as present as she usually is. When she is on the page, she's hurt or she's arguing with Percy. She has been off page a lot. And I feel like that this is the first time in this book where we actually get inside her head a little bit. And that was, like you said, absolutely necessary, not only to the story, but just to understanding her better. And I do appreciate that she refuses to give up hope on her friend just because she talks a lot about not liking change and really liking stability because since she was little, she really didn't have any of that. The life of a demigod is a very chaotic life to lead. And hers in particular was especially difficult because she ran away when she was 7 and then she found a family in Talia and Luke. And not long after that, she lost Talia and now Luke has become Luke Kronos. Mm-hmm. And it's all very difficult for her. And so she wants to hold on to what she had before. It's just a part of her character. And I'm not going to fault her for that because I feel like that's born out of trauma and there's, you know, solid reasons for that. And I think even though it's not like the biggest detail in conjunction with that, I really loved that there was a concrete reason for her wanting to be an architect specifically.
Yeah.
Because she wants to build something that lasts because her life has been in flux since she was 7 years old. And I was like, that's, you know, you could just say Annabeth wants to be an architect because that's what she wants to be.
She's interested in architecture. Yeah. She likes it.
Yeah, it's what but, she like, likes. There's a whole backstory and a whole reason as to why she loves architecture, and Rick took the time to tell us that, and I really appreciated this Annabeth moment.
And I love how it gives us all sides of this interest in architecture. We kind of see where it's coming from, why she is so interested in it. We see how talented she is and the kinds of things that could be born of her mind if she's given the time to really master her craft.
Right.
And then we also know that it is kind of her fatal flaw as well, in that she wants to make a lasting impact on the world, and sometimes she's, you know, not always cognizant of what that, you know, like, how that could impact her current situation.
Right.
Or that sort of thing. So, like, I love that this simple thing, her loving architecture, is not just a simple thing. It is rooted in how she grew up. It affects her present and also is kind of a part of her fatal flaw.
Yeah.
Like, I love that it is so much a part of Annabeth.
Yeah. And I feel like this is a little bit of foreshadowing. I don't know if you would necessarily call it foreshadowing, but, like, a warning in a way, because they very much talk about pride being her fatal flaw and not being able to take down Luke Kronos because of that. And you very much, at this point in the story, are asking the question, okay, will Annabeth help defeat Luke and mm-hmm. Kronos, or will she die because she is unable to do that? Like, it makes you worry about Annabeth and her future for the rest of this book.
Absolutely, yeah, because, like, Talia's not just saying, I don't think Annabeth's going to be able to kill him. It's, I don't know what she's going to do when confronted with a Luke who cannot be saved.
Yeah.
Or that appears can't be saved. Or is she going to accept that he can't be saved? Or is it going, you know, is she going to give up? Or is she going to not be able to do the thing she has to do? Like, it makes you worry because you don't know if Annabeth is the only person who can do this. Is she going to be able to, or is it going to result in her death before because she hesitates or right. whatever? Yeah, it gives you pause. It gives you reason to really worry about how this whole thing's going to shake out for
her. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so they have their conversation and it's good to see where they're at, but as they're standing there kind of in this quiet moment, Percy is suddenly, his mind is elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
He is physically still present where he is, and only a moment lapses in this entire time he's gone. But he is suddenly with Mr. D in a dingy bar, and it's just like, how? Like, how is he here?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And so I'm calling this prophecy count number 30 because
okay.
even though it's not a prophecy, it is a vision.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's sort of like in real time, it's happening in his mind because Dionysus isn't there either.
Right.
He's buried under some rubble where he fell out of the sky.
Yeah.
And he's currently recuperating, but he meets Percy in a very real place, in a very real time, but neither one of them are like, I mean, they're there because he literally ordered a Diet Coke.
Yeah.
But they're not there at the same time.
Yeah.
So I'm calling it a prophecy count.
Well, and he also does give Percy valuable information that he needs to know.
That's
so I think
true.
That's also kind of a bit of a...
Yeah. What is
a prophecy tenet? I was going to say, like, if there are tenets of what makes a prophecy...
Yeah.
I think it's some sort of vision. It's some sort of knowledge that you gain
mm-hmm.
in one... Whether it's good, things you want to know, or things you don't.
Yeah.
It's knowledge gained. So, yeah.
Maybe we should have defined what a prophecy is before we started counting them.
Hey, that's okay. But I think it's fair to call this prophecy number 30. So, we'll call it number 30.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we thought we'd get there.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So, Mr. D, the god of partying, is able to appear at any party being thrown at any time, and it is called Party Time.
Yes.
Which I love.
And I have a bone to pick with this, because I feel like that means he should be able to hang out with the party ponies literally at any time. He could have gone directly to Percy.
Yeah.
With the centaur's present.
Yeah.
It is party all the time with the party ponies.
They're partying right now.
Yeah.
They're drinking root beer.
Yeah.
They're enjoying life.
Why did we have to crash poor Earl whatever's
name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
His poor birthday party.
Yeah.
And put the Diet Coke on his tab.
Right.
You don't know if he could have afforded that.
Yeah, if he's throwing a party, he can afford a Diet Coke. It's cheap. But yeah, so Percy and Mr. D are basically standing by this Pac-Man game while Mr. D is trying to play and win and ordering Diet Cokes that he's not getting because Percy hasn't placed the order. How dare you? And he's basically telling Percy that, first of all, he wasn't trying to get Percy specifically. He was reaching for any demigod hero, and he got Percy. And part of me doesn't believe that.
All of me doesn't believe that.
Because he specifically names drops Annie or whatever.
Yeah.
And says, like, oh, it could have been that Annie girl. I would have been fine with her.
Yeah.
But he was reaching out to Percy.
100%. Percy is the child of the prophecy.
Yeah.
He knows, Dionysus knows, that Percy is the one to make that decision. He's the one to turn the tide. He's got to win this war for them. And Annabeth would have been a great champion and probably would have been able to pass along the message or whatever. But, like, Dionysus wanted Percy. There's no question in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there are some specific things that he drops here that are all big things.
Yeah, I had a lot of thoughts here, and I feel like this is actually a very large and kind of heavy discussion. So I just wanted to get your take on it.
Yeah.
So first and foremost, he says, without the gods, Western civilization will fall. So if they are defeated, if Kronos defeats the Olympian gods, Western civilization will fall. Essentially, the United States will be no more.
And most of Europe. Because I think people consider Europe a Western
civilization. That's true. Yeah, yeah. I find that hard to believe because modern society, and especially America, is such a melting pot.
I mean, it wouldn't cease to exist immediately,
right.
But I feel like if the Titans were allowed to rule, things would change very dramatically, very quickly, and I think that's more or less what Mr. D meant, is like, life as you know it will not exist. Yeah. It's going to change broadly and dramatically.
Which I can get behind that sentiment. I feel like that's not... Maybe that's what he meant, but that's still not how I interpreted his words.
Sure. Yeah.
But in addition to that, like, I Googled it because I wanted to make sure that I was being right. Western civilization / culture is more than just Greek and Roman culture.
Correct.
It's also, like, a Germanic culture, Christianity, like, all of that is wrapped up in what we consider to be Western civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, that erases other cultural contributions to modern society. There are other cultures that have impacted the way that Western civilization, and specifically the United States, has formed. And especially, like I was saying, modern society, there are so many other cultures that have founded us and that continue to mold us into, like, who and what we are.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing that kind of goes with that, I guess, is like, he said the gods are manifestations of our culture. So I was like, what came first, the chicken or the Greek god? Because that's so, like, I don't necessarily think there is an answer to that or needs to be an answer to that, but it's a really interesting concept to kind of chew on, because if the gods are manifestations of our culture, and they also, if they disappear, our culture will crumble. It's like, we created the gods, but now the gods have a hold on us as well. And it's a very cyclical, like...
Yeah, I think the important note for me to keep in mind here is that he's not just saying that the gods will disappear. It's the gods will fall and Kronos will take the place of the gods, which mm-hmm. will change Western civilization as you know it. So I get what you're saying, like... If these two things, if one creates the other, then how can the gods disappearing, how can that immediately erase culture if we created the culture that created them?
Right.
Like, it makes sense to kind of think of it that way. But you're also dropping the Titan culture on top
mm-hmm.
of whatever vacuum is left when the gods are defeated. And I think that's the point he's trying to make, is that Percy has no idea what to expect when the Titans rule. And, I mean, in the past, they've eaten their children. So,
yeah.
Who knows what they have for yeah. humanity and what they have planned.
Yeah.
Supposedly, Prometheus said that Kronos was going to allow humanity to continue as was and wasn't going to kill humans and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, we don't trust Kronos. We know that that's not how things are going to go. So, like... You know, it's hard to know exactly what the Titans have in store.
Yeah.
But I think that's more or less what he's kind of yeah. getting at, is yes, modern culture exists, it is what it is, but if the gods die and the Titans take over, it's not going to be what it is.
Yeah. I think it's not going to be what it is a much better interpretation than what he said, which was that Western civilization will fall.
Yeah.
So I like that version better, because I think Western civilization will fall is like a very Eurocentric mindset. And we know that these earlier books, like, Rick wasn't in the place that he is now.
Yeah.
And so I guess I just wanted to, like, bring that up and be, like, a little critical of the choice of words and that sort of thing. But
yeah.
regardless of all of that, I find this concept of the fact that the gods and civilization are symbiotic to be super interesting to consider.
Mm-hmm.
And this really is the apocalypse.
Yeah.
You know, like, society could fall if the Greek gods are defeated.
And as Typhon has crossed the United States, humans have become aware of what's going on. Like, not
yeah.
they don't know that it's the Greek gods fighting a monster, a Titan monster, and, like, all that. But they know it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
They can feel that finality of all of this coming down upon them. And so it's interesting that, yes, like, they were able to find a birthday party for this guy named Earl, thank God. Because nobody's partying, because everybody can feel just how heavy and terrifying everything is yeah. about to be. It's all craziness, but...
It is.
Yeah. Okay, so the other news that he delivers is that Typhon will arrive in New York tomorrow. That the gods have held him off as far as long as they can, but there's just no stopping him at this point. Hephaestus has been hurt badly enough that he is healing and will not be of any use. And Mr. D is still currently hiding in a pile of rubble in Virginia. So he's not going to help either. Which, I mean, when you're thinking about, like, the gods' best fighters, like, neither one of them is the fighter I'm thinking of. It's not Ares. It's not Athena. It's not even Poseidon, you know. But knowing that there are two gods down already doesn't bode well for what they can expect when it comes to New York tomorrow.
Right. Anyway,
we also learn that Kronos has not reached his final form. He has not yet absorbed this Luke body that he's inhabiting is just a stopgap. It's just a holdover until he can become the Titan King. And when he does that, his form will be 10 times more powerful than that of the true form of a god.
Motion to refer to his current form as the Lucrysalis.
That's brilliant.
Because he is literally a chrysalis.
And he's going to become a Kronos butterfly.
Yeah.
Kronofly. It's a
Kronofly. But, like, it's literally a Luke-shaped chrysalis so that he could become his final form. It is a Luke chrysalis. That's what we're calling it.
It's that weird, awkward middle Pokemon.
I do think of Pokemon when I think of, like, chrysalis.
Yes.
Chrysali.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you've got the Caterpie, and he becomes the chrysalis one, and then it becomes Flutterby or whatever it's named.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Like, I think of that, too. And they're usually in three stages, so it's kind of the same thing. It started with Luke, and then you got Luke Kronos in the chrysalis form, and now we're awaiting final form Kronos that's going to defeat us all with a look. Or actually, just being present.
Just existing.
You don't even have to look at him.
Yeah.
Being in his presence will basically incinerate them all, and that's not great.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that's fabulous. It's the Lucrysalis, which is just amazing. One of the other things that we learn is that the gods need heroes, which we've kind of known and we've heard about this before. But I think it's very interesting that Mr. D took time to really hammer this home with Percy in this conversation. Like, they had a lot to talk about and a lot of things that they needed to kind of catch up on, but he makes a point to Percy to be like, we need you. Like, we need you to do this. We need you to save Olympus. We need you to do... And it another, you know, hammering at home that the gods do not just exist in a vacuum. They need humanity to believe in them in order for them to continue to exist.
Yeah.
And it's...
And I love how Dionysus was like, if you ever tell anybody I said that, I will deny it forever.
It's true. It's true. His last plea to Percy is to protect his son Pollux, because we know he lost a son in the other battle, not
Castor. Yeah.
Yes. And so Pollux is his son fighting, and he's asked Percy to protect him. So
yeah.
Something to...
And, I mean, very interesting to consider. And Percy takes a moment to be like, I wonder how many of the gods are worrying about their demigod children right now. And I think a good part of them are, like, whoever you are, your demigod children are an extension of yourself. I feel like even Ares, for example, takes pride in his children and how battle-thirsty they are. And so, like, I think it would bother him if they died in battle. And, like, he might not express that the same way that a human would, but it's still, that emotion is still living there inside of him.
I think so, too. Even the gods that haven't acknowledged their children, like, I feel like they know that they're their parent, and they're still going to feel it, even if they have never spoken to their child.
Right. Yeah.
I agree. So suddenly Percy is back in his body and is back in New York on Fifth Street. And a moment has passed as he's standing next to Annabeth. And he is just kind of taking stock of what's around him. And he sees Paul Blophus's blue Prius.
Mm-hmm.
Right there.
Yep.
They've been battling around it this whole time. Like, it's right there. And he panics.
Yeah. This scene, I could see it so vividly in my head, specifically with Walker in the role, and because he's, like, going out of his mind, trying to get to the car, trying to open it, trying to be like, we have to get them somewhere safe. Like, he is worrying so much about his parents, and I feel like this performance from Walker literally could earn him an Emmy and, like, launch his career into the stratosphere. I mean, he's already doing fine for himself.
Yeah.
At the age of 12, he's already done things that most humans have not done, include look Ryan Reynolds in the face, right there in front of him. But aside from that, like, I could see the emotion that he could put out for the scene in like, oh, it's going to destroy me.
Well, and yeah, I absolutely agree. There are so many moments in these books that are funny or lighthearted or battle-y and, you know, all that. But then there's little things like mm-hmm. this where the reality of the situation hits Percy right there. And like, he knows that his mom and Paul are in the city somewhere, but I think his mind has led him to believe that they're home and that there's quote unquote safe,
asleep on the couch.
Yeah. And that there's no way that they could possibly get tangled up in a monster exploding or whatever else could happen. And so to see that they've literally been sitting in their car in the midst of all of this chaos that he's been enduring for the last 2-3 days now, it just emotionally overloads him to where he's reacting to the emotions. He's not in control of what he's doing at all. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you 100% that seeing Walker act this out is going to be impressive, especially considering he will have 4 seasons under his belt by this time and will have a really, really good solid grasp of who Percy is. And I just, and seeing Leah as Annabeth, like, kind of reacting to Percy's freak out, I think is going to be one of those moments that you don't get in the book, because we don't have time to experience Annabeth's reaction to this. Mm-hmm. But I want to know how she feels seeing Percy have this dramatic a reaction to his mom and Paul, considering her relationship with her father.
Right.
Like, it's going to also impact her to see him freaking out like this. Mm-hmm. And I think that whole thing is just a really interesting, poignant moment that's going to be really cool.
And even her as his best friend grounding him and, like, bringing him back down to, like, where he can think straight. And, I mean, Chiron was there, too, but I think Annabeth and Percy's relationship is so interesting. And despite all the fights that they've been having lately, also pretty solid, all things considered. So this could end up being a really good moment for them, in addition to the moment we see from Walker as Percy.
Agreed. Definitely. Okay, so Pandora's jar is seen belted into the back seat, and Chiron kind of makes the point and says, like, that's not supposed to be there, right? And Percy's like, no, I put it in the safe at the Plaza Hotel. Like, there's no reason it should be here. And Chiron explains that now that this has become kind of the signal of Percy giving up, like, the fact that he can release hope and Prometheus will immediately understand what's going on, this now, the jar will follow him.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the battle, the jar will follow him, and in his weakest moments, he will be presented with the temptation to give up hope.
Yeah. This is like the worst version of Riptide.
It really is. It really, really is. It's just a reality. It's going to happen. So no matter what they do, this jar is just going to haunt him for the rest of this battle.
And this is the first time that I've truly understood how manipulative Prometheus is.
Yeah.
He knew this would happen.
Oh, yeah.
And he wants that constant reminder for Percy.
You can just give up.
Yeah.
If you just give up, nobody else dies. If you just give up, it'll all be fine.
Your parents will be safe.
Yeah. So they move the car, and they move Paul and Sally to a safer location, and as they're kind of doing that and working on that, they start to hear a helicopter, and we see the Dare Enterprises logo, and it arrives, and suddenly dive bombs.
Yeah.
Because
hits that wall around the city, and then
Morpheus's spell has put the pilot to sleep, and Annabeth jumps on the nearest Pegasus and, you know, it gives Percy a nice little jab. It was something to the effect of, let's go get your girl.
Yeah. Or
she's your friend.
Yeah. And then I think friend was, like, italicized.
Yeah. So, like, she's clearly not excited that Rachel Elizabeth Dare has made her grand entrance.
Yeah.
But it's time to save her first.
Yeah.
And then
this was such a cinematic cliffhanger ending to this chapter. I could just see it in my mind's eye. It's going to be great in the television show. Something perfect to end an episode on. And, like, I know everything's going to be fine, but I was legitimately, like, worried, and I saw that it was the end of the chapter, and I was like, oh, darn it. Like, I wanted to keep reading.
Yeah.
But I, as quick as this moment is, I also feel like there's a lot wrapped up in here, because I really love that Annabeth was super quick thinking to call Guido,
mm-hmm.
and that she was just like, okay, we got to do this. Like, there's no question. She's not hesitating, which, child of Athena, really love that for her. But also, I've seen a lot of talk lately, from the beginning, just all the time, about some people don't like Annabeth and Rachel's rivalry. They feel they're critical of Rick's writing, saying that these two shouldn't have been fighting each other and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, I mean, I do think that it's a trope that women are always fighting against each other, especially if it's like over a guy, whether or not that's founded or whatever. But I think we have to remember that these are children. This is probably Annabeth and Percy and Rachel's first interactions with, like, somebody they like, where they understand the heaviness of the feeling of love or, like, a deep care for somebody. And, like, I think that it's okay that they're fighting. I think that's a very normal thing to see on the page.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. It's not that they're fighting because they don't see each, you know, like, it's not like Annabeth hates Rachel because of everything Rachel is. She doesn't like Rachel because Percy has an attachment to her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a human thing to be possessive of people and things that you care about. Like,
yeah. And she's jealous. That's it.
Like, she's a human being, and the person that she is interested in as a friend and slightly more, maybe, has shown interest in another human. It's not abnormal to be jealous in that situation. It's also not abnormal to not be jealous.
Yeah.
Like, you can, how you react is how you react. And I don't think it's a bad representation of these kids to have these two competing kind of for Percy's affection.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's realistic, especially when you're 12, 13, 14 years old, that you don't necessarily always think, I don't need to compete with her.
Yeah.
Percy is going to end up or, you know, be with who he wants. Like, it's not realistic necessarily for them to think critically at age 13.
And I think two very quick things to keep in mind is, one, Annabeth's fatal flaw is pride, and I feel like that has something to do with her jealousy and,
agreed,
and like, her place with Percy. And two, Rachel is immortal, and we saw from the beginning Annabeth doesn't really trust her to understand this world that they live in, despite having seen it firsthand.
Yeah.
And so, to me, it just makes sense that the jealousy is there, and the wish to keep her distance is there, and to keep Rachel distant from everything that they're dealing with.
Yeah. I think it's natural for what we know about Annabeth, what we know about Percy, and what we know about Rachel. I think this whole relationship that the three of them have with each other is just how it naturally unfolded the way it was going to.
Yeah.
So that pretty much wraps up the chapter. We don't know what happened to Rachel. We have to wait, and we'll find that out next week.
Uh-huh.
But we do have to do our favorite quotes and our favorite moments. Mine is kind of an interaction. Mine was Percy saying, Talia's right. Luke has already betrayed you so many times. He was evil even before Kronos. I don't want him to hurt you anymore. And Annabeth says, and you'll understand if I keep hoping there's a chance you're wrong. Like, there's just something about this little bit of their conversation that perfectly illustrates who they are.
Yeah.
It's Percy wanting to protect Annabeth because he knows what Luke and Luke Kronos are capable of, and Annabeth saying, yes, but I know my friend's still in there, and I'm not giving up if there's any chance at saving him. Because it highlights exactly who they are.
Yeah, and it was a very mature interaction for them as well.
Oh, yeah,
which
absolutely.
I appreciated.
Okay, and what was yours?
Mine's really simple and silly. It was from one of the party ponies who says, dude, talk later. Waste monsters now. I loved it.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I love the party pony so much. Okay, and speaking of favorite moments, my favorite moment is the party pony's arrival and everything it brings with it. It's hopeful, it's exciting, and it's a party, so
yeah.
Who doesn't love a party?
Exactly. Dionysus definitely loves a party. And speaking of Dionysus,
what's your favorite moment?
My favorite moment is Percy's chat with him, because it gave us some information, it gave us some insight, and we got to see a side of Dionysus that we don't see a whole lot, and I really thought it was interesting and unique and good.
Agreed, yeah. And unexpected. I would not have expected to see this happen at this moment.
Yeah.
Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at SubjectifyMedia.com. We are home to three other podcasts as well. If you like revisiting your favorite canceled and cult classic shows, consider tuning in to Rewatchable for in-depth discussions about Firefly, Veronica Mars, Avatar The Last Airbender, Buffy, and Angel, and many more. We also have Not About the Weather, which is a general interest show that sometimes features interviews with our favorite creators. Lastly, we also have Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, which has discussed every episode of the show, contains exclusive interviews, and will be covering the upcoming Teen Wolf movie. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can also email us your long-form thoughts to prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and that would be awesome. You can leave us questions and comments or ideas for content and episodes you might want to hear from us in any of these places. We do have some feedback this week, and I am going to throw it to Karen to get us started.
Yay! So the first one comes from Quiva, our friend who loves to write in to us through email. Really appreciate that. And she says, I would love an episode where you went through different constellations and where they came from, that type of thing. I just think it would be so good and interesting to listen to. And let me tell you that I jumped on this because we had a lot of fun talking about the Scorpius constellation and the fact that, like, Scorpio and Libra were mixed in there and everything, and that was really cool. And, like, yeah, I mean, Venus, Jupiter, like a lot of the Roman gods, we see a lot of Greek mythology in the stars, especially from, you know, our culture and Western civilization and all of that. So, like, yeah, we're going to do an episode about this.
It would be really cool to kind of see what constellations have a Greek story. There's so many. I mean, we Zoe, for crying out loud, became a constellation. So I feel like there's a lot that ties into Greek mythology and kind of the whole series here, too. So, yeah, that's a really cool episode idea. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I've always loved astronomy and space, and I think we could probably do probably two episodes on, like, the planets and the constellations. And so I'll figure out how exactly we want to tackle that, but I'm very interested in doing that, so thank you for suggesting that.
Yeah, very cool, very cool. We got some tweets this week. One was from Monster Donut Podcast in response to our episode about the pit scorpions, and I thought it was really funny that they were talking about scorpions in one of their episodes, and they said, P.S., just listen to Prophecy Podcast's episode about pit scorpions, and their explanation of where in the myth this might have come from makes so much more sense.
Yeah, I feel like we put out these episodes, like, very close to each other.
Just funny enough that it worked out that
way. Yeah. But they have a really awesome logo, so
they
if you want more Percy Jackson podcasts in your life, check out PJO Pod on Twitter.
Yeah. And then we had one more tweet from Ian Davies.
Yes. Ian and I have been chatting a lot lately because he is a huge fan of Hercules, and I just really appreciate that. And he's been sending me some really interesting things. Actually, he said, great interview. This was in regard to our interview with Sarah. I've got a Megara mug that Karen would love. He sent it to me. I do love it. I also discovered Percy because of the film. I saw the poster, which looked really good, and saw that it was based on a book, so I started reading. I've now read 22 Rick Riordan novels.
Wow.
I mean, that's awesome. I really love that.
Yeah, you know, and you can see the pictures if you go to our Twitter, you can actually see the pictures of the mega mug, and it's crazy and adorable, and yeah. That pretty much wraps us up here. Thank you guys for reaching out. It's always lovely to interact and see your thoughts and things, and for the episode idea, because we need a few more of those,
I'm so excited
thanks
now.
Thanks for that. Next week, we are planning a deep dive on Chiron, which I think is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
He's not a god. He's not a human. I'm really interested to see how Greek mythology dives into Chiron and really gets into that.
And I'm surprised that it's taken us this long to get to him, only because we've tried to go through the gods first, but he's been so prevalent throughout the story. He's very relevant to what we're reading right now. I'm really excited to see if I learn anything new about him.
Agreed. Same here. Until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio, signing off. Over and out.
We are reading chapter 15, right?
Yeah.
I didn't forget to change that.
I think it's like, I can double check.
Okay. Just make a
check. Also, do you want to pause for butts or do you want to just keep going?
We can take a quick pause for butts.
Yes.
Chapter 15. Pause for butts!
Pause for butts!